Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we go further into the articles on the website at CatherineColleen.com, or you can get there by going to KOABD.com. All the same, if you have questions, you can send them in on the community page at CatherineColleen.com or KOABD.com, or you can email them to questions@KOABD.com. And I'll get right back to you. If you want to stay anonymous, let me know, and I will make sure that you do. So today we're going to be talking about your favorite misery and branching off of that into whether or not that is worry. But let's start by identifying your favorite misery. And think about people that you know. Let me give you a few examples. I have a friend who loves to grieve. Long-term illnesses, deaths of close family members, even distant family members. Strangers will do in a pinch if there's nothing else to grieve about. But they're most likely to just revisit past losses and just draw out the grief as long as possible, up until the point that other people start, you know, to say, hey, you know, you've got to work on getting over that. And similarly, I once knew a wonderfully successful man by any standard, very successful, with a very exciting life, and he loved to be annoyed. He just was not happy unless he had something to complain about. I get the irony of that, but it was true. He would complain, and then he would smile, and it was cathartic. I don't know, something. He loved it. Loved to complain. Loved to be annoyed. Loved to have something to complain about that was specifically that was annoying, rather than angering or offensive or something like that. And so sometimes a person's favorite misery really stands out, right? It's really obvious. But sometimes it's not. And I think that we all have a favorite misery. So I challenge you to ask yourself, what is yours? What's your favorite negative emotion? So I started exploring this for myself, right? What's my favorite misery? What's my misery of choice? Aloneness is, which should not be misery, but in the aloneness in the sense of unworthiness, which is not aloneness, right? And we should draw a real distinction there. But unworthiness, poor me, nobody loves me. That's a favorite one. I definitely tend to go there more often than anywhere else. That's definitely my root. For Ruben, it's probably worry. So we're going to talk about worry because that's a really common one. So I suspect that we each have a favorite misery, and that even if we rarely go negative, like for example, you almost never see the Dalai Lama go negative or have a negative feeling. He is so practiced in his detachment from everything. But I will bet you, and if I ever had the chance to talk to him, I would ask him, what is his favorite misery? That if he has a negative emotion, what does it tend to be? Because I think we tend to be dominated by one in particular. For some, it might be anger or something else. So the reason why I want to bring this up is that if you call yourself out on your favorite misery, if you recognize it and go, oh, yes, I do tend to prefer that particular negative emotion. I do tend to have that come up most often. Then I wonder if you can dissipate it. So I did this experiment myself. Obviously, I wouldn't have anything to present here. So I did this myself. And so every time I started feeling unworthy, I would call myself out and go, oh, yes, there I am, wallowing in my favorite negative emotion of unworthiness. Oh, yes, that's my favorite one. And then turning it into almost like a favorite flavor of ice cream sort of made me laugh at myself and kind of pulled me right out of that. So we tried something similar with Ruben in terms of worry. Worry was his favorite negative emotion, his favorite misery. So every time he would start to worry, he'd go, oh, yes, there I am worrying again. You know, that's my favorite one. And it would kind of bring him out of it. And so it does help if you call yourself out on your favorite misery. Recognize it when it's happening. It does dissipate. It does start to happen a lot less often. A lot less often. So it's worth taking the time to ask yourself, when you're having a negative emotion, what does it tend to be? And sometimes just sort of noting that. If you're journaling, and if you're not, I hope you do, whether it's on your phone digitally or on a tablet, laptop, on paper, in the margins of books, something. Take note each day of generally what were you feeling today. And we feel a lot of things as we go through any one day. But what were the negative emotions? And you'll start to see the pattern. So even if it's not super evident, this is really worth asking yourself. And when we talk about favorite misery, your favorite negative emotion can actually become an addiction. And that's a strong word, I recognize, but my favorite definition for addiction is that it's something that you do that momentarily makes you feel better, even in kind of a twisted way, right? There's some catharsis immediately, but in the long term, there's negative impact. That is my favorite definition. I cannot remember the brilliant person I heard it from, but that's my favorite definition of it. So short-term catharsis, long-term negative effect, and you do it compulsively. You just do it, sometimes without even thinking about it. That's what an addiction is, and these negative emotions can be addictive. The good news is that positive emotions can be addictive too. All kinds of feelings can be addictive as well, but addictive in a good way, because there's never a negative side effect. So we need a new word for a compulsion or addiction that ends up with a positive result. I'm gonna go out and look for a word for that. So the other thing that I found that helps with this is that I've recently focused on creating connection. Connection to myself, connection to this moment, connection to others, connection to body and mind, and so on. And when I find that the more connected I am, the more completely connected I am to all aspects of myself and my reality, these negative emotions just seem to have no place. The negative perspective just disappears completely. And so the epiphany is, it's about connection. Step one is being connected enough to yourself that you can recognize what you're doing. So in the context of negative emotions as a sort of an addiction, let's talk about worry. And worry is very, very popular. I don't know, but I'm guessing that if I surveyed lots of people about what their favorite negative emotion is, the one that they tend to experience more than others, worry probably ranks really high up there, if not the highest. And so you may tend to worry about your kids, you may worry about the world, you may worry about politics, you may worry about finances, you may like legitimately have things to worry about. But you might also just be using your kids and the world and politics and other issues as an excuse to worry for the sake of worry, because worry is your favorite emotion. And this is what I want to call you out on. So think about it. What does your worry get you? And if worry is not your favorite emotion, think about your favorite emotion and ask yourself, what does it get you? Does it get you attention? Maybe. If you're so worried about something and you express that to your spouse and to your friends and your family, it gets you a lot of attention, doesn't it? Does it get you extra care? Does it get you extra love? Does it keep you from having to face the hard reality of your own life by being worried about what other people are doing? If you spend time thinking about what your kids are doing and trying to predict their futures, or what politicians are doing and trying to predict the future of your country or your world, or if you look so externally and you worry about all these external things, then I can tell you one thing you're not doing, and that you're not asking questions about yourself. You're not looking at you and your reality. But you might say, oh, but I'm worrying about my money. All right, finance is part of your reality. And if you are not connected to your money, if you have not fostered that connection to your money, then it's probably leaving you. And so I might say you have reason to worry, but you never really have reason to worry, do you? Because worry doesn't get you anything. Maybe some extra attention, but it's not going to solve your money problem. Sitting there worrying about it doesn't solve anything. So worry, I started to examine this. Worry is when you tell yourself a story about someone and fret about all the possible negative futures, right? If you're worrying about your kids, you're telling yourself a story about what your kids are doing right now, right? They made this decision that you think is a bad decision for them. So you sit there and go, oh, they did this thing. They made this choice. It's so terrible, and they ruined their life. And you imagine all the horrible things that are going to happen to them in the future because of this thing they did or this choice that they made. Right? So you are telling yourself a story about someone, and you're fretting about the possible negative futures. Now, it sounds a lot like stress. In fact, worry is very stressful, right? You'll find your cortisol levels rising. Stress is when you tell yourself a story about yourself and fret about all the possible negative futures. So I think I would actually put worry about money into stress. It can certainly be stressful, but either way. So this is, worry is no different than stress. You're telling yourself a story and you're fretting about possible futures. And that's it. So worry is just stressing about other people that you have no control over. You don't have control over these other people. You know, once your kids reach about 13, you don't really have control over them either. You don't have control over what politicians do. You don't have control over the weather. You should have better control over your money. So go out and make it happen. And I'll have some articles coming up on how to form a connection with your money so that it comes in as opposed to going out. But worry is just stress. You're stressing about other people and other situations that you have no control over. Now, maybe you just woke up and you noticed some things in your life that need to change. And there could be a lot of worry in that stage. If you recently woke up and you are walking through these stages, the stages of human development, and if this is new to you, this is my hammer for which everything is a nail. Go to the website and search for stages of human development. If you're walking through these stages because you recently woke up, there you may notice some things in your life that need significant change. You may notice that your finances need significant change, that your relationships need significant change, that your body or your mind or your emotions need significant change. So something in your situation, right? This is very common. And you're going to be going through a process of improving that situation and making it everything you can imagine it could be. And that could be a source for worry because the future is so very, very unknown at that point, or so it would seem. And maybe that change that you want is going to be hard. And you think to yourself, this is going to be really hard. What does that mean? What does that really mean, it's going to be hard? That means you're going to have some challenging conversations, or you're going to have to do some challenging things with your budget, or there are going to be challenges. But those challenges are going to help you grow, and ultimately you are in control of that outcome. And yes, you may have to really challenge yourself to do some things that most people wouldn't do or wouldn't have the guts to do. But that's still no cause for worry. So when you find yourself starting to worry or stress, because they're really the same thing, notice your mind telling you a story and say, oh, there's the story part. And then notice your mind running through all the possible negative futures and say, ah, yes, that's what happens. I tell myself a story and then I run through all the possible negative futures. There it is. There it's happening. And now breathe. You do not know the future. And the past is done. Nothing you can do about that. But you can decide the future. You don't know the future, but you can put yourself on a vector of your own choosing. Well, there's a nerdy word. You can put yourself on a path, on a direction. Vector for the nerds out there. But ultimately, you don't know the future. You don't know your future. You certainly don't know anybody else's future, and that includes your kids. So be here now, right now, and make this moment count. And you can't make this moment count if you're worrying or stressed out or experiencing any other negative emotion, sadness, unworthiness, anger, annoyance, offense. This isn't going to help. So be here now and make it count. So there's the question. When you think about your favorite misery, what negative emotion do you tend to spend the most time with when you go negative? And are you addicted to it? Do you get this kind of twisted joy from it? Some kind of catharsis because you get rewarded for it with extra attention or extra love or people gathering around you? It feels really good when people gather around you or when they commiserate, right? Commiserate. To be in misery together, right? How good does that feel? And could you change that up and create catharsis from a positive feeling? Our species is not, I think, really rigged for that. We tend to notice the negative and bond over the negative much more so than we notice the positive and bond over the positive. Although sometimes we do. The birth of a child can be, you know, people are very happy for you and kind. But think about that. Spend some time thinking about the emotions that dominate your time and whether or not those are the emotions that you want to dominate your time. All right, that's enough for today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time to talk about how to stop letting worry about your kids dominate your life, because getting rid of worry is easier said than done, and worrying about your kids, if you have kids, you know what I'm talking about. Worry about kids can dominate your life, and boy, have I got some methods for you. Really, really good stuff, so make sure you tune in for that one. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.